you know, there's a balance to it, but you know, he, you know, as soon as the first couple of guys got on in the third, it was, you know, you know, we went to the bullpen, and those guys did a nice job and got us through the game all right. You know, but, I mean, the game was kind of out of reach pretty quickly here.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, J.D. Martinez with a fast three-run homer to set the Cubs on the wrong path. That's for sure. Cubs manager Craig Counsell right there, discussing the effects of the Mets' 11-1 win over the Cubs yesterday at Wrigley Field. I'm Mark Rohde here with you up until the start of Cubs-Mets Game 2 today. That'd be 12:45 is when the pregame will come your way. First pitch to be thrown by Jameson Taillon at 1:20. Tyler McGill, 2-3 with a 3.52 ERA on the mound for the Mets. Taillon right now at 3.08 overall. And Imanaga yesterday, 3 innings, 10 runs, 3 homers, one of those the J.D. Martinez home run, 11 hits, ERA is ballooning now at 2.96 for Shota Imanaga after his second real dud of the season. Had that other tough outing on a crucial May game right at the end of May at the Brewers, which felt really bad too. That was 7 runs, but Imanaga has mostly been great for the Cubs this year. Let's talk more about Shota and the Chicago Cubs as we bring in Brett Taylor from Bleacher Nation. Brett, thanks for joining us. Alarmed at all about what we saw from Shota or any of the work that Imanaga has done this year?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on. I think it was certainly difficult to watch yesterday and not feel some measure of concern just at the extent of what the Mets were doing. But I tend to think, or at least for now, because we're really talking about one outing that had that shape, I can tell myself he was always going to give up some home runs, part of his game, the way he works. When the weather heats up in summer at Wrigley, we know the ball is going to fly sometimes, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's a story I could tell myself depending on how he looks the next few times he takes the mound. And so right now what we know is that he has mostly been tremendously successful, and so I kind of have to fall back on that until he proves otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Craig Counsell said before the game that he doesn't need to pass any more tests, and I think that we all had to kind of look at Imanaga and say, yeah, we know he's not going to be a 0.96 ERA, 0.96 ERA all year. We know that's not going to happen, but we kind of looked at it like, is he really going to be good? And yeah, I think that this guy is a really good pitcher, and we need to see more of the bad before the actual alarm bells go off for somebody like Shota Imanaga. The question I was asking at the beginning of the show, Brett, and trying to answer for myself, and I don't see a path to this right now, are the Cubs capable of getting hot, as in winning 8 or 9 in a row, winning 15 of 17. I'm not even using the phraseology make a run. I'm just wondering, can the Cubs get hot?
Gosh, that is such the perfect question for this team.
Yeah.
Because now we've been watching them for 3 months, and that's exactly what it feels like. It feels like there's a lot of talented players. There are a lot of reasons for, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say optimism, but reasons to see some possible future success in all phases of the game.
And 86 games to go, too. I just wanted to throw that in there and let you go. 86 games to go. Like it's not out of, like, I hate to get to that desperate point of baseball, you know, excuses or just making a case, but there are 86 games to go. There's time to get hot, but carry on with answering the question of can they get hot?
I mean, 86 games, that can be reassuring or that can be a threat, right?
Depending on the outcomes. Maybe.
So, I mean, it just hasn't felt like this team was going to be clicking all at the same time, you know, all phases at the same time. And, you know, I actually do think it's very appropriate in this conversation to point out where we are in the season, because I think we, as people who've followed baseball for a very long time, we know we know how not infrequent it is that you look back at the end of the season and you're like, oh, remember that terrible stretch? Remember those 3 months where they were really scuffling and then they got really hot and that was all just part of the story of this
team?
It does happen. And so, you know, we want to leave open that possibility, but I think we know as we sit here today, what has to happen for that to turn around. And is primarily the offense needs, they need some of the guys who are supposed to be here to hit, to start hitting more consistently.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the only way, at least the way Jed Hoyer was talking. For now, he is saying there's no magic pill. Y'all are going to have to do what I paid and projected many of you guys to do. I mean, we saw finally a little bit of slug in the series prior against San Francisco, where they're at least hitting some home runs. They're at least scoring a handful of runs in each game. And so I was kind of trying to rationalize and make a case for the Cubs, you know, maybe it begins right here. But then, and I understand they had their souls kind of taken out of them yesterday at Wrigley Field, and it's hard to probably work up a lather trying to score runs when you're that far down. But there was just nothing, just a dud, and that's what's kind of led me to the question of can they even get hot? And I just don't know where it's going to start and not end, I suppose.
You know, to this point, we've had not excuses, but we've had the ability to say, you know, and we know because we've done this for stretches where it's like, well, they faced a lot of really good pitching lately, or, well, they're getting a lot of guys on base and it's just sort of not coming through at the right time, or, boy, they're really hitting some batted ball luck. You know, all of these things accumulate and there is truth to it. I'm not going to deny that there's some truth to it, but when it's 3 months worth of a sample of seeing the performances of a lot of these guys, I think it becomes a lot harder to sell that story and for fans to buy it. And I think you just have to look up and down the lineup and sort of come to terms with the fact that there are a lot of talented individual players that are probably not going to perform at sort of an outsized level, which is what would be necessary for this to be a well above average offense. I think we can say pretty comfortably that's not going to happen at this point. But I still have trouble looking up and down and saying, and not saying, this has got to at least be an average offense.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like they've got players. They have guys.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with what I think Jed Hoyer is saying. Yeah, I think a lot of us thought the Cubs were going to be good this year because of those players. So yes, I totally and completely agree. If we are riding the Cubs roller coaster together, I guess I would describe the Cubs closer situation as you're on one of the loops and you're stuck upside down right now and you don't know when it's going to begin to tilt, because Hector Neris allowing that three run homer on Monday to Estrada, which is just feels so fresh still. And then you had, you know, you had Keegan Thompson coming up with what was a really nice save, actually striking everybody out that he faced in the ninth. Colton Brewer made us sweat a little bit, but congratulations to him. He got ended up getting a save in that really good Kyle Hendricks start that day. We know that Tyson Miller gave up the late home run to Jorge Soler. I don't know why I'm reliving this with everybody, but it brings it brings me to the question, though, Brett. Who are you handing the ball to if the Cubs, God forbid, get in a save situation today out at Wrigley Field?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer to that right now, and I don't know if Craig Counsell agrees, but it just has to be anybody except Hector Neris right now. I almost feel like this week has been, you know, for as tight as the games wound up being, and for as much as we may not have loved some of the performances, I think this is the way it has to be, where it's going to be cycling through matchups, who's fresh, what's the best option for that day. In part, both because of Neris' struggles in the role, but also because then you at least have him available perhaps for better, more optimized matchups earlier in the game. And I think this is probably a dance that the Cubs are going to be doing for at least another month. And this actually dovetails well with the offensive discussion and Jed Hoyer's comments about solutions having to come internally. It's not as if you couldn't make a trade for a bat right now or for a closer right now. It is theoretically possible, but as Jed rightly pointed out, the prices are exorbitant. And I would add to that, it's not just that the prices are exorbitant, but you've got to have a team that justifies paying those prices. And I think so far, this team has not demonstrated that they justify a substantial investment of future talent in trying to win in this 2024 season. And it kills me as a fan to say that. I hate that. I'm very tired of what the last, 15 years of boom and bust cycles, but you do have to be a little honest. And so I think right now the hope is they can float it a bit for the next month. And then the draft happens and you look back and you say, okay, it is now worth adding a surefire closer to this team, or trying, or adding a bat to this team.
Yeah. And I wonder too, what the conversations are like with Craig Counsell right now, because they've been pretty transparent with us in saying that they look at Craig Counsell as almost like an extension of the front office. So I don't know what his input is on this, if he's honest, like if Craig Counsell is like privately like, nah, this ain't it. You got to give me a year to figure this thing out. Like a lot of times we'll see that with, with college coaches. Sure. These aren't my guys. You know what I mean? Like those aren't even his coaches for for some of the guys that are on this staff. All to ask you, how are we evaluating Craig Counsell, and how should we be evaluating Craig Counsell, and your opinion on the work he's done?
I think you're wise to point out some of those, the transition tax almost, in terms of what a new manager can do for you in a given year. I think it's a lot less perhaps in baseball than in other sports, but it's not zero. It's not, it's not his coaching staff exactly. He has not had the eyes on a lot of the core players and the players coming up to be able to maybe make a strong evaluation and sort of bang the table for certain guys or not have certain guys. So those are going to be a factor as we look back on the season and evaluate. And I think he's just going to have runway that almost no other manager was ever going to have.
Sure.
And so that's not to avoid your question, but it's almost like barely even matters, right? Because he's not going anywhere. He'll be right here. Listen, I think Jed Hoyer maybe takes more grief than is deserved, but I think he's probably the one who's going to have sort of more questions about his performance than Counsell anytime soon. And it might be the rare situation where a manager ends up surviving the front office executive who hired him.
Yeah, you're right. It does feel like that. It does feel like, okay, what are the flaws in this? And, there were so many things that we talked about at the beginning of the season in terms of needing to get more power and kind of a late in the offseason signing of Cody Bellinger. I thought, like you, that the Cubs would be better, but did you see some of the flaws, or were you skeptical of some of the ways the team was built going into this season by Jed Hoyer?
Yeah, the part that I don't feel too hindsight-y about is one of the big topics at the end of last season was that the Cubs looked like a team that needed two more bats. Mm-hmm. And that was a team that had Cody Bellinger already. And so granted, it was not a good offseason for adding offense. Hand up, totally acknowledge that. And I think the trade for Michael Busch was inspired. That was a perfectly appropriate, good move that has so far worked out pretty well. But when retaining Bellinger is the only other, it's hard to even characterize it as an offensive move, right? Because he was on the team last year. It did feel like they were at least a bat short. And that I think has been borne out. I think the bullpen stuff is just so hit and miss year to year that it's a lot harder to, I know a lot of people are very critical because of the way it has played out, but I didn't hate having Adbert Alzolay lined up at the back with Julian mm-hmm. Merriweather setting him up and a number of young arms that we've seen come up, and it didn't look like a bad setup to me.
No.
And They got hit with multiple significant injuries right away. Obviously, Nery's performance is not at all what was expected. So that's the one I think people are maybe missing the mark when they criticize in hindsight. And you'll note, by the way, we haven't mentioned starting pitching, right? Because that's the one area that's been outrageously good.
Yeah, no doubt. I didn't feel bad about it either at the beginning of the season. The Adbert Alzel, I think part of that, though, for me, and I think probably with you and many others, was because you had Hector Neris backing him up, that you're like, oh, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch. You never know when a closer or reliever is going to go bad. I don't know if that is the case for Hector Neris, if he's actually gone bad, but I am, for the record, I am with you that that is still, I don't know what Craig Counsell is going to do, but, and I hope the Cubs get into a situation where they need to save a game or at least win. I'd rather have an 8-run win, but I would still march Hector Neris out there because, you know, until like if he does it again today, that's it. Maybe that's how close it is. But as we're just talking about today, I just think Neris is still the guy.
Yeah, I think you've just got to pick your spots. It's not, you know, we got a little spoiled last year in terms specifically of how rapidly Alzolay emerged as like, oh, he's the closer now. Like it just sort of clicked and happened, and he never blew a save for a couple months. But it's often a lot bumpier than that. And I think this is an area where Craig Counsell will have to kind of show his value, that he should, in theory, be very good at getting the right guys set up in the right spots. And if someone emerges, if Neris, you know, bounces back and he's like, okay, we're good, or if someone else steps up, great. But if not, then you've just got to figure out a way to close out these games, even if it means it's a committee back there.
It's true. Brett, as usual, great stuff. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Even to talk about this team.
Yeah, even to talk about this team. That is Brett Taylor of Bleacher Nation. It's a frustrating team. Yeah, I mean, we've said it before. Look, the Cubs are 36-40. It's not atrocious by any means, but when you thought the team was going to be better, in a lot of cases, people still think the team is better, it's a little bit more painful, and fans are a little bit more passionate, and talk show hosts are a little bit more angry, because you're right there still. You're right on the cusp, and there are still 86 games to go on the season, so that's why it's so frustrating when the Cubs lose by 10 in the first game of a homestand out at Wrigley Field against the New York Mets. That's why it's so frustrating, and the beauty of baseball, that you ride the roller coaster, if you do. You know, God bless you if you don't like riding the roller coaster with us. Sorry about all this if that's the case, but that is what we do, and that's why baseball is fun, and today could completely change the narrative again, and that would be the hope. When we return on the show, oh man, the end of the White Sox game yesterday. And how did Eric Fetty do? Because always got to check on Fetty with the White Sox. And my favorite parts about the MLB at Rickwood Field, it came, at least in my mind, from an unlikely source. I'll share that with you next on The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Cubs Mets coming up in just a little bit. Tyone against Tyler McGill, Tyler of the McGills. Cubs trying to rebound after the 11-1 loss to the Mets yesterday. I'm Mark Rohde, here with you up until the start of Cubs baseball. White Sox baseball had a tough ending to it yesterday. The Tigers beat the White Sox by a final score of 2-1. In the White Sox ninth inning, it's 2-1 Tigers. Oscar Colas struck out swinging. One out. Paul DeJong hit by a pitch with, again, one out. Sox down one run, and Andrew Benintendi is at the plate.
1-2. That one hit to center as Vierling will make the catch. And
Paul's
DeJong
get back.
Was not aware of the outs. He's going to get doubled off at first, and that's how the game will end.
Yeah, this is an eventful way to lose, and that's the way the Sox have been for a bit. That's a little frustrating.
Oh, man, I would have loved to have been in a White Sox chat room right there. The anger, the permanent palm to forehead after something like that in a season like this, because if you were one of those White Sox fans who was watching and rooting and hoping and showing how much of a diehard fan you are, I'd imagine that moment put you over the edge. Whatever the edge might be for you, you probably went over it. Whatever that means in your case, I would imagine that was the case. But not just because of the blunder or the fact that it's something that should happen to nobody. It happened to, like, your crafty veteran guy, Paul DeJong, who... He's an ISU guy. You know, Paulie, come on, man. Paul DeJong, not losing track of the outs. And Paul DeJong, who the White Sox are desirous of trading. So I'm not saying that anything is ruined in that regard. But just to add to what had to have just been pain for White Sox fans and putting them over the edge. There it was. Sox snuck it in on you on a Friday night, and maybe a lot of you are hearing it for the first time right now because you've tuned out to most White Sox fans, especially, or White Sox games, especially a game like last night where it started during the 5 o'clock hour on a Friday night. That's just an awkward time. So there it was. That's what happened with the White Sox at the end of the game yesterday. Tommy Pham did homer for the White Sox. Eric Fetty looked just fine except for a home run. Eric Fetty went 7 innings, allowed 2 runs and 5 hits, struck out 3, walked 1, giving up the home run to Carson Kelly. But, yeah, he still looks tradable, too, as we continue to look ahead. I mean, one of the guys that was a part of the Dylan Cease deal throwing for the White Sox today, as a matter of fact, Drew Thorpe is going. And I know that he got roughed up against Arizona, allowing 7 runs. Here it is, over 3 1/3, 6 hits and 5 walks. So we'll see what Drew Thorpe could do in his third start. But yeah, he was part of the Dylan Cease trade. And then you have Kenta Maeda, been around forever. He's been around forever guy now. Kenta Maeda. There he is, still pitching here. And for Detroit, there you go, Kenta Maeda. So that's something to look forward to in terms of the White Sox and the development of Drew Thorpe. But sorry about that tragic ending that they had. One other thing I wanted to get to before we get out of here was the Major League Baseball at Rickwood Field event, the oldest professional ballpark in the United States, and former home of the Birmingham Black Barons of the Negro Leagues. And it was they had that special regular season game between the Cardinals and the San Francisco Giants the other day. And honestly, I did not get to see I have not watched the actual game yet, but last night I did. I had it on my DVR. I watched the entire pregame that they did. You know, an hour long plus pregame of all of this great content and some great stages where, you know, you're getting the greats up there like Ken Griffey Jr. and Derek Jeter and Big Poppy and David Ortiz, all these guys talking about what this night means and the Negro Leagues and those that came before them. It was just this really terrific event. You know, Reggie Jackson, one of those guys at the round table who, wow, did he tell it like it was and told us all that, yeah, what, you know, great career and wow, these guys that came before me and all that kind of stuff. I think Reggie Jackson is one of those who paved the way. He essentially said he went through hell because of all the racism that he endured throughout his career. So I think he is, and wow, was that deep, the what he was saying, the unedited version of it too. I mean, it was just some strong stuff, and Reggie Jackson is all there and telling truths, and it was just amazing to watch. But one of the other guys that I was most, I'm not going to lie to you, entertained by was Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds, who is, like, if you put together sports villains, Barry Bonds is probably top five. He became a sports villain for the steroids era and all of that. This guy who a lot of us thought that he didn't even need the extra home runs to have become a first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, that would have happened if you had skinny Barry Bonds, but he became a villain in baseball. And you know, then some of it might have been justified, but you forget that there's a person there with an actual personality who was a godson of Willie Mays, who was showing some serious emotion about that, which I'll get to in a second. But I thought it was really funny, a moment on that stage where, again, you had Ken Griffey Jr. and Barry Bonds on the same stage, which was pretty cool just in itself if you are a baseball fan, just to take that snapshot. But Barry Bonds was pretty hilarious a lot of the time up on that stage, as, you know, he was dealing with the pain of the loss of Willie Mays. But I want you to listen to this.
Tell me right now, on the spot, what would you do against Satchel Paige?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Gone. You lost your mind, Jeter. Read about it on ESPN, Fox, News, whatever else you want to talk about. You got to believe in yourself. If I don't believe in me, who's going to believe in me?
That's right.
I'm a drag button.
Derek, you said
I'm drag button.
You lost your mind, Jeter, and it went on. You know, these guys just kind of talking about that, but I loved seeing that, whatever it was. I don't know if it's disingenuous or what, but I'll just, for whatever it was, like, I loved the personality and the character in this moment of Barry Bonds, and that's not something that I expected to see. And maybe this should be why he was being the genuine Barry Bonds up there, because of course they had to ask him about Willie Mays.
Poppy was just saying that you got a chance to meet the great Willie, and just didn't know if you wanted to share anything with the world about him. That's what he was asking.
Yeah, you know, Poppy, I could share a lot of things, but there it goes.
You can't
control it right now.
I know. Yeah.
For me, it's just too soon.
Yeah.
So forgive me to the public and the people. Yeah. It's just too soon because it's an out of control feeling. Like right now, I'm talking about things. I'm happy. I'm smiling.
Yeah.
But then you want to go back to when I was 5 years old, Willie.
That's
and
right.
I'm sitting here. I can't control that.
Go back to Satchel. Go back to Satchel. Go back to Satchel.
Yeah. I mean, that again. If that's not real, I don't know what is. Like, seeing a man mourn in real time. And I know, man, everybody's got an opinion about Barry Bonds. I had a bad moment with Barry Bonds when I was covering the Cubs, and I was over in the visiting locker room. And I didn't really want to talk about it right now because, like, I'm trying to look at Barry Bonds in a different light. I'll take that for what it was. I thought the whole event at Rickwood was really cool, really enlightening. And I expected that it was. And thumbs up to Fox for the entire broadcast. Great stuff. Big thumbs up also to Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation for coming on the show today. Also, Brett Taylor talking Cubs. He was on in the noon hour if you want to go back and check that out. But it is Cubs baseball coming up next. For Tyler Farengol, I'm Mark Grody. Have a great rest of your weekend right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, Mark Grody, beautiful man.